Chapter 59, the killing of the demon Naraka. Naraka. Text number 27, I believe. Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam.
Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam.
Vasudevaya Vishnave.
Vasudevaya Vishnave.
Arushaya Dibijaya.
All pervading,
all pervading,
Lord Vishnu,
Purushaya.
Purushaya.
The primeval person.
The primeval person.
Adi.
Adi.
Original.
Original.
Vijaya.
Vijaya.
The seed.
The seed.
Purna.
Purna.
Full.
Full.
Bodhaya.
Bodhaya.
Knowledge.
Knowledge.
Te.
Te.
To you.
To you.
Namaha.
Namaha.
Obeisances.
Obeisances.
Obeisances unto you, the Supreme Lord, Vasudev, Vishnu, the primeval person, the original seed. Obeisances unto you, the omniscient one. So, this is Mother Bhumi, Bhumir Uvacha, Namaste Deva Devesha, the Lord of the Demigods, Deva Devesha Isha. So now, text 27, Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam. Text number 28. Ajaya janai tresya brahmanenam tasaktaye paravaratman bhutatman parat paramatman namostute. Obeisances unto you of unlimited energies. Anantasaktaye. The unborn progenitor of this universe. Ajaya. Unborn. But who is the source of everything? The absolute. O soul of the high and the low. Para and avara. O soul of the created elements, O all-pervading supreme soul, obeisances unto you. Tvam vaisisrikshuraja utkatam prabho tamo nirodhaya vibhasya samvitaha stanaya sattvam jagato jagatpate kala pradhanam purusho bhavan para. Designed to create, O unborn master, you increase and then assume the mode of passion. You do likewise with the mode of ignorance when you wish to annihilate the universe, and with goodness when you wish to maintain it. Nonetheless, you remain uncovered by these modes. You are time. Kalaha. Jagat Pate. Kalaha. The Pradhana. And the Purusha, O Lord of the universe, yet still you are separate and distinct. Purport. The word Jagataha in the third line of this verse indicates that the functions of creation, maintenance, and annihilation are here mentioned in a cosmic context. The word utkatam, prominent, indicates that when a particular function is being carried out, whether universal creation, maintenance, or annihilation, the particular material quality associated with that function becomes predominant. We might read this one also, text 30. Aham payo jyotir atanilo nabo matrani deva mana indriyani karta mahanitya kilam chara charam tvayadvitiye bhagavannayam brahma. This is illusion. That earth, water, fire, air, ether, sense objects, demigods, mind, the senses, false ego, and the total material energy exist independent of you. In fact, they are all within you, my Lord, who are one without a second. Purport, the earth goddess in her prayers directly touches upon the subtleties of transcendental philosophy. Clarify that although the Supreme Lord is unique and distinct from his creation has no independent existence and always rests within him. Thus the Lord and his creation are simultaneously one and different, as explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu 500 years ago. To say that everything is God without any distinction is meaningless, since nothing can act like God. Dogs, shoes, and human beings are hardly omnipotent or omniscient. Nor do they create the universe. On the other hand, there is a real sense in which all things are one, for everything is part of the same supreme absolute reality. Lord Chaitanya has given the very useful analogy of the sun and the sun rays. The sun and its sunshine are one reality. For the sun is the celestial body that shines. On the other hand, one can certainly distinguish between the sun globe and the sun rays. Thus, God's simultaneous oneness with and difference from his creation is the final and satisfying explanation of reality. All that exists is the Lord's potency, and yet he endows the superior potency, the living beings, with free will, so that they can become responsible for the moral and spiritual quality of their decisions and activities. This entire transcendental science is clearly and rationally explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshurum Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Dina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svapadaptikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lankayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Mande Sri Guru Dinatarinam. Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam. Vasudevaya Vishnave Purushaya Dibijaya Puna Bodhaya Te Namaha. Prayers offered by Bhumi, Mother Bhumi, in appreciation of Krishna's position, really as the source of everything. Purushayadi is the beginning of everything. He is mentioned in the first verse. Purushayadi. He is the original person. Govindamadi Purusham. Tamaham Bhajami. He is the origin of everything. The source of everything, the maintainer of everything, and also as is mentioned here. He assumes the mode of passion, utilizes the mode of passion for creation. He manifests and utilizes the mode of ignorance for destruction. Of course, for maintenance is the mode of goodness. Everything, whether it be passion, goodness, or ignorance, or a mixture of them all, combination of them. Even though one may be prominent, still, Krishna is the source of all of these energies. He's the source of everyone and everything. And of course, the creation, as a result of his intelligence, as a result of his determination, as a result of his desire, has a purpose. Everything has a relationship with him, everything is dependent upon him, and everything is working according to his desire. However, as is mentioned here, Krishna creates the living entities, or shall we say, the living entities are manifest, because we're all eternal, so there's no question of creation actually for the living entity. It's only when, when you think about it, it's just it's the material world where we see beginning, middle, and end. In the spiritual world, everybody, everything exists in its entirety and in its perpetuity. It's only in the material world that we get this sense of creation and destruction. In the spiritual world, that's not necessary. There's the features of the material realm. But we get the creation with a purpose. The material creation has been constructed in such a way so that the living entities get an opportunity to exercise their independence. And so consequently, as a result, even though everything is working according to God's desire, incorporated within that and facilitating that is everybody else's desire also. Because, you know, we have free will, we have independence, as mentioned here. That's also a facility, and that's also Krishna's desire, that he gives everybody that. Every living entity gets that opportunity to exist. Just turn this off before it embarrasses us. And this is a bit of a problem for many people, you know, that it's a challenge to understand. How is it that God is all good? And he's the source of creation. And yet, within the creation we see so many bad things, so much suffering. Why is that? If God is all good, then why are we suffering? If he's omnipotent and all potent, then he can just remove all of the suffering. And of course he can do that. That's true, he can do that. But in order to facilitate his desire, and in order to facilitate the desires of the living entities, we are given freedom to choose how we want to act. But along with that freedom to choose comes also the responsibility for one's actions. Well, this is a bit that people don't like. That they can choose how to act and do what they like, but they have to then accept the responsibility for how they behave. We don't like that. We want to give it all to God. Because Krishna says, I'm not responsible for your decisions. You're responsible for your own decisions. Otherwise, if we didn't have that freedom, if we didn't have that independence, then we would just simply be automatons, just robots, just, you know, no freedom, no free will, no independence. And nobody would like that. That's intolerable. You know, we all like our independence. So as a result of the fact that we are independent, see, because Krishna is, he's also independent, fully, supremely independent. And because the living entities are his part and parcel, Mamai Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha, we are parts, if you like, of God. And so consequently, you know, as a result, we have same qualities and characteristics. We have personality, we have individuality. We have freedom, if you like. And to take that away from the living entity would mean the living entity would cease to exist, practically speaking, in terms of certainly in terms of personality. There would be no personality without individuality and freedom to act, to choose. So the material creation is facilitated by Krishna, as is explained here by Mother Lumi. He is the source of everything. He is the complete knowledge. Where is it here? Purna Bodhayate Namaha. Omniscient. Purna Bodhaya means he knows everything. He is complete knowledge. He is the Bijaya, the seed of everything, the source of everything. He is the personality, the impetus, if you like, the inspiration that sees to it that the material creation is manifest. It is by his arrangement that the material creation remains for some period of time, and it is the arrangement of the Lord through the agency of the mode of ignorance, basically facilitated by Lord Shiva. Lord Brahma is a personality who puts it all into motion. Lord Shiva is the personality who destroys it all, and Lord Vishnu is the personality who maintains it. So there's order. There is a great deal of order, and there is a great deal of purpose in manifesting the material creation. This is lost to most people. This information, that there is a relationship between God and the creation, is lost to most people in this day and age. You know, so much so that, you know, in the after World War I and World War II, then the philosophers were discussing, even before, in the early 19th century, the discussion was, you know, how can civilization create situations where everything seems so out of control? And so, you know, gives rise to this idea or this understanding that actually God doesn't have any control over the creation, it's gone out of control. So you get this philosophy, or God is dead, basically. So in this, especially in this day and age, there's no connectivity. There's a disconnection between the living entity and God. No relationship. And so so we get this vision, or this understanding, this philosophy within society, that actually there's no God. There's no purpose, there's no order, there's no structure. Or you get the opposite. Everything is God, as Sridharananda Maharaj is pointing out here in the purport. Everything is God. So everything within the creation is spiritual, and all of the activities are spiritual, so whatever you do, it's all spiritual. So it's all right. But of course, as he mentions here, you know, if it's all spiritual, then how come none of us can act like God? How come none of us are free from the reactions? This is the distinction of God and his creation. Even though he's manifesting it, even though he appears within it, actually he is in control of it. It doesn't control him. Whereas we see from all of the other living entities, they are very much under the control of the material energy. So much for their God, their aspirations to be God. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has appeared basically to teach us what our relationship is with God, what the material world's relationship is with the Lord or the Master or the source of the creation. What is the purpose of the creation? The purpose of the creation is to give an opportunity for the living entity to exercise his free will and independence, but realize that ultimately exercising our free will and independence outside of our relationship with Krishna simply entangles us further and further in material existence. You know, the last word of the Bhagavad Gita is Savadhamam Parijaja Mamekam Sharanam Daja. Krishna says that the purpose of existence, practically speaking, is to surrender to Krishna. Whichever way we act, we will be surrendering to Krishna. We can either surrender to him directly by following his instructions or indirectly by working under the influence of the material energy, under the influence of the material creation. We'll think in illusion that we're acting independently, but actually we are being controlled in any case by Krishna through the agency of the material energy. That's why Krishna says, Dayavihi yesha gunamayi mama maya dharatya. This material energy is my divine potency, and it is very difficult to overcome. It is impossible actually to overcome the influence of the material energy, even though there's the illusion of being independent and free, if you like. This was sort of the motto of the 60s, you know, I'm free. But actually we're not free, we're bound up. Certainly we're free to make our decisions, but we're not free in respect of accepting the reactions. We have to accept the reactions. Whereas if we are able to surrender to Krishna, then we can actually overcome the influence of the material energy and actually be free by choosing to work under Krishna's direction. Mamekam sharanam raja aham tvam sava papebhyo moksha yasyami ma srichaha. Krishna says, by surrendering to me, then you can get free from the influence of the material energy. You can get free from your reactions. That's real freedom. The regulated principles of devotional service are the means by which we get free from the influence of the material energy. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches us very clearly that there is a purpose for the creation, that God is still connected to his creation. It's not God who is disconnected, it's us who are actually disconnected. He's not disconnected from his creation. Even though it appears to be so chaotic, the reason why it's so chaotic is because of our behavior and the reactions that we've created for ourselves. Because as Krishna says, I'm not responsible. Krishna's overall orchestrating and manifesting and directing, but it's directing according to the desires of the living entity. And so the chaos is what we've created, which he's allowed and facilitated, but directly it can be attributed to the misbehavior of the living entities and the fact that they don't understand what the purpose of the creation is. And so in misusing it, and abusing it, they then get the reactions. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches us to see everything in its proper perspective, to understand that the material creation is actually coming from Krishna, that it is directly connected to Krishna and should be respected and utilized as such. And we should know, you know, For what purpose the Lord has created the material energy for. Not for our rampant misbehavior, but rather for proper purposes, constructive purposes, which are meant for the upliftment. The independent spirit basically means degradation. Independence in sense gratification means degradation, whereas becoming dependent upon Krishna and working according to Krishna's plan means freedom from freedom from the reactions of one's misdeeds or misbehavior. So Lord Chaitanya taught this philosophy, Achincha Abheda Bheda Tattva, or Bheda Abheda Tattva, that the material creation is simultaneously one, in other words, it's coming from the Lord, but at the same time it is also different. And Hridayananda Maharaj gives the example here of the sun and the sunshine. The sun rays are coming directly from the sun, and so therefore they're non-different from, but at the same time they're distinctly different. Prabhupada gives the example. When we say, oh, the sun is shining, Prabhupada's example is saying, when you see the sun shining in the room, you say, oh, the sun is in the room. Right? But obviously the sun's not in the room. If the sun was in the room, then the room wouldn't exist. It'd be... But when the sunshine comes into the room, you say, oh, the sun is in the room. So, the sun and the sunshine are non-different, but at the same time there's a distinction between the two. So similarly also, the material creation, the living entities, we are also one with Krishna. Krishna mentions that. Mama evangsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. We're eternally in relationship with Krishna. We're eternally an expansion of Krishna. But at the same time, as being one with him, we're also eternally different. Our personality is different. Our individuality is there. Mama Bhuta Sanatanaha. We're always eternally an individual. Krishna mentions that in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any other cease to be. So the real purpose of the creation is to understand that relationship that we have with the Lord. The real purpose of the creation is to understand its purpose and understand our relationship with Krishna. That's why Hridayananda Maharaj says here, this entire transcendental science is clearly and rationally explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a purpose for the speaking of the Bhagavatam to establish who is the source of the creation, Janmadyasya Yataha. He who is the source of everything, but who himself has no source. This is a very common question people ask, you know. Who created God? Right? Who created God? Because within our experience, everything or everyone has some source. We don't find anybody who is without source, without beginning. That understanding or that experience just doesn't exist. In the material world, everything has a beginning, a middle and an end. This concept is very, very difficult for people to understand. Except for the devotees, it's a very foreign construct, a very foreign idea for people. But here we have it described here. Purushayadi Bijaya. He is the primeval person who is the source of everything. He himself has no source. Very difficult for people to understand. And for the devotees, it's easy. to understand a person who is without beginning. It's easy for us to understand that we ourselves have no beginning. Well, at least theoretically anyway. That we're eternal. Like the Supreme Person, the living entity is also eternal. Just that he is the Supreme Eternal. Was that Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam? He is the Supreme Eternal amongst all of the eternal living beings. He is the Supremely Conscious. We are conscious. Just like God is conscious, so we're also conscious. But he is supremely conscious. He knows everything that's going on. We can only know limitedly what is happening. So this is the real purpose of free will and individuality and independence, is to choose to understand who we really are. That's the real choice that we have to take. It's a choice that most people are ignoring. The fact that ultimately we have to acknowledge our relationship with Krishna. This is what Bhumi and previously Kunti and others are pointing out, that actually everybody has a relationship with God. Unfortunately for the materialistic persons, or materialistic mentality, because the actions of the living entity have been so divorced from and separated from one's relationship with Krishna, then there's this huge covering of ignorance. Of unconsciousness, if you like. But the purpose of existence is to re-establish and to recognize our relationship with Krishna. And the responsibility that comes with that. Because along with that responsibility, along with that realization comes a huge responsibility on how to act, right? Properly. We're supposed to act properly. We're supposed to make the right choices with that understanding. It is easy to appreciate why people remain in so much ignorance, because they're making the wrong decisions. And they're avoiding, at every turn, basically, this opportunity to recognize the relationship between God and his creation. And of course, that's very clearly enunciated by the followers of the Bhagavat Marg. Of the followers of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the followers of the Bhagavad Gita, because the Bhagavatam's purpose and the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita is to establish that God is the source of everything, that he has a relationship with his creation, that being part of the creation, if you like, we also have a relationship with him, and it's incumbent upon us to learn how to act within that relationship. That's the challenge, especially the challenge for the humans. This is Mahaprabhu's challenge, if you like. Our challenge is to learn the science of self-realization, which means understanding the nature of the relationship between us and God, or us and Krishna. And then learn how to act in that relationship. I was doing some shopping the other day in the supermarket in Port Augusta, and this young gentleman came up to me and he said, first of all he said, whoa! Whoa! Because, you know, I'm walking around my dhoti and, you know, tilak, and, you know, in Port Augusta that's sort of like being a Martian, being from outer space. And then he said, what religion are you? at least he got an idea that I was somewhat religious. And I said, I'm a Hare Krishna, what are you? And he showed me this thing, emblem coin or something that he... It looked like the Star of David. So I said, oh, you're Jewish, which was a bit of a surprise to me. Don't meet many Jewish people in Port Augusta. They said, no, I'm a pagan. I said, oh, okay. But then he asked me an interesting question. He says, what do the Hare Krishnas believe? Right? What do the Hare Krishnas believe? And I sort of thought, whoa. What am I going to say in, 1 minute that's going to be meaningful to this fellow? they call it an elevator pitch. An elevator pitch is, and it's probably not a bad idea for all of us to work on an elevator pitch. It means the amount of time that you might get in an elevator to explain to somebody what you're doing. Right? Encapsulate what you're, So I thought, what am I going to say to this guy that's going to make sense to him, and mean, be meaningful considering the amount of time that I had and he was busy and so forth. We've been distracted because it was about 7 o'clock at night and there were about 15 young, 15, 16 year olds and they were all packing the shelves. So they were running around with these trolleys and dropping off all the stuff. So the aisles were just full of stuff on the floors. So the young guys were, putting it all in the shelves, putting it all away. So then the first thing I thought of was, in one sense, our elevator pitch, I thought at the time, because I obviously hadn't practiced it, but the seven purposes of ISKCON are pretty much, our elevator pitch. So the first thing I said was, we teach a simpler, more natural way of life. That was the first thing I could remember, right, of the seven purposes of ISKCON. That's also the shortest. I said, oh, that's pretty cool. I said, I'm thinking, a simpler, more natural way of life. And I was thinking, that's why I drive my motor car and use my computer and, don't live a really simple, more natural way of life. Because I didn't tell him that. But it is interesting. We say we're teaching a simpler, more natural way of life, but do we actually practice it? That's another thing. And then I thought, well, let's be more practical. And I said, actually, our business is to teach people about spiritual life. I mean, that's simple thing, and it's what we do. And I said, oh, that's cool. That's nice. And then I just left it at that. I thought that was it. That's as much as I could tell him. I didn't, because otherwise, I was going to have to then explaining Krishna and Lord Chaitanya and chanting Hare Krishna and so forth, which I didn't have time to do. Yeah. And he had to go and work, and I had to bring the shopping list back to Chinchurupa because she was cooking dinner. That's why I was shopping. But it struck me because at that particular point in time, there was somebody who was inquiring, what do you do, in a friendly way. And we actually have to be prepared to be able to teach people in those kind of environments, what are we here for? And in a way that they can understand it. If I started, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, giving him a Bhagavatam class, then he wouldn't understand. Or there's a limited amount of information that you can give the person. In a Bhagavatam class, it's okay. We can speak more elaborately, if you like. And of course, it's interesting. We are used to hearing an elaborate description of our philosophy as Hare Krishna devotees. But at the same time, when it comes to giving it to others, we actually have to be able to give the philosophy in a very succinct and precise way to people, who are sort of like moving past us very rapidly, especially for the book distributors. This is a skill that has to be learned very quickly. Otherwise, you just lose people. They're just gone. Or we have to present it in such a way so that they're attracted and will want to find out you know, the detailed version, if you like. But ultimately, that's it. The transcendental science of the Srimad Bhagavatam needs to be understood. Certainly, we should understand it in a very detailed and elaborate understanding. Therefore, we have the Bhagavad Gita. But Srila Prabhupada, you know, presented the philosophy very succinctly and very neatly, if you like, in his small books, right? So that they could be given to people and easily digested. You know, one of the complaints that the devotees get from the from people who get the Bhagavad Gita is that they can't understand any of the words. Interestingly enough. Bhagavan, Paramatma, Brahma Jyoti. I remember when I first started reading the Bhagavad Gita, I couldn't understand it. There were too many words in the Bhagavad Gita that were foreign to me that made it very difficult to read. And this is one of the reasons why the association of the devotees is so important. Because in the association of the devotees, the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita becomes meaningful. Because we're actually able to teach people. Here's what this means. Here's how we actually apply it. This is what the Bhagavatam, or this is what the Bhagavad Gita is actually telling us to do. Right? Do this, do that. Don't do this, don't do that. But we need to understand it. And of course we need to be practicing it. So we can effectively teach others. And that was my realization from, you know, bumping into this young fellow. Actually, I was thinking, it's required of us to be able to present the philosophy in an elaborate way, but at the same time also it's a responsibility for us to be able to present a very simplified version so that even the man on the street can understand what it is and what it means. What is our relationship with God? And how are we supposed to act in that relationship? This is it pretty basically. Who am I? What is my relationship with God? How should I act in that relationship? What should I do practically? And of course then there's the end result. What do I get? Actually, these are the three aspects of Vedic instruction. Sambandha, you know, who am I? What is my relationship with God? Abhideya, you know, in consideration of who I am, what shall I do? And then, if I do it, what do I get out of it? What's the result? And of course, the end result should be prema. We should become happy. We should be happy devotees. That's the end result. So, of course, we could say to people, you know, we teach people how to become happy. If somebody asks, what are you doing? We teach people to become happy, which is a fact. That should be the, you know, susukam kartam avyayam. Devotional service is very joyfully performed. Prabhupada mentions, if we chant the name of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, then we'll be ecstatic. I read that this week and I thought, okay, I'll try it. And it's my experience that it actually works if you chant Hare Krishna. First of all, calling on the name of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, especially Lord Nityananda. If you're having some difficulties in your spiritual life, then call out to Lord Nityananda. course, Lord Nityananda is the Adi Guru. So he's the original Guru. Well, Lord Balaram is the original Guru, because Lord Nityananda is his representative, or is his expansion. But the spiritual master is the non-different. So we can call out to Lord Nityananda, or we can call out for the shelter of the spiritual master. And then chant Hare Krishna. So this is another instruction that we can give people. Our business is to teach people how to chant Hare Krishna. Huh? Especially in this day and age. Lord Chaitanya has taught us Atitya Bheda Abheda Tattva, that we're simultaneously one and different from the Lord, but our means to realize that is through the chanting of Hare Krishna. And so therefore, you know, the purpose of the Hare Krishna movement is basically to teach people how to chant Hare Krishna. Of course, that's what Prabhupada says in his instructions. To propagate spiritual knowledge, to systematically teach, right, to teach people how to practice the Sankirtan movement, to teach people how to chant Hare Krishna, basically. That's our business. And of course, by chanting Hare Krishna, then we get a very, very distinct realization of Krishna's connectedness to the creation, and we get a very distinct realization of Krishna's connectedness to us. Right? Especially if we're chanting Hare Krishna without offense. It's probably one of the biggest challenges for us, is to chant Hare Krishna, but chant it properly. There's actually a science to chanting Hare Krishna. The reason why we're not feeling ecstasy in chanting Hare Krishna is because we're committing offences. That's why it's recommended that we call out to Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya, because by calling out to Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, we can actually get free from those, from that offensive mentality. But especially in this day and age, the purport, if you like, of the Bhagavatam, and the purport of the Bhagavad Gita is to chant Hare Krishna. Not the only one, but one of the most important. And to learn how to chant Hare Krishna properly. In taking shelter of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, we are recommended to actually be very humble. This is the first ingredient, if you like, in chanting Hare Krishna. The problem is, speaking for myself, we tend to be somewhat self-absorbed. Not somewhat, completely self-absorbed. Oh, all of my problems. The whole universe is revolving around me and my problems. But actually, the proper mode of chanting Hare Krishna is to present oneself before Krishna and the spiritual master as an insignificant, as insignificant as we actually are. And that actually we are dependent upon Krishna's mercy. But in order to be eligible for Krishna's mercy, we have to present ourselves, you know, as dependent, if you like. We are ultimately dependent, not independent. And then, in that mood of humility, then we can start chanting Hare Krishna. Calling out to Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, especially Lord Nityananda, for mercy. We need mercy. We are dependent. We're not independent. We like to think, when we start thinking we're independent, that's when we get ourselves in trouble. But when we realize that we're totally dependent upon Krishna and his mercy, and when we chant Hare Krishna in that mood, then we start to get a sense of connectedness with the Lord. In the beginning, this is my experience, when I start chanting Hare Krishna, I find it very hard going in the morning, especially in the evening. If you start chanting Hare Krishna in the evening, then it'll be very hard going. But even then, if we chant with the right mood, then, you know, by the time you get to the 12th or the 13th or the 14th or the 15th or even the 16th round, we start to feel ecstatic. And we think, wow, This is great. This is the most exciting thing that I've ever done in my life. That's my experience in chanting Hare Krishna. In the beginning, first 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 rounds, it's hard going. Trying to get rid of this, you know, this sort of idea of who I am. Not realizing that actually I have a relationship with Krishna. And especially if I can, you know, avoid that mentality of just being absorbed in myself and all of my problems. If I can just be absorbed in a proper understanding and humility who I really am, that actually I am a servant of Krishna, and I depend upon his mercy to make any kind of progress, then by the time I've tried to focus my attention on just Krishna and not myself, by that stage I find myself completely ecstatic and very happy. I think, wow, yeah, that's why I've been chanting Hare Krishna all these years. And why the process of Krishna consciousness is actually so ecstatic. And really the solution for everybody's problems. And why we need to be able to teach people how to chant Hare Krishna. This is the process, and our purpose in one sense is to teach people. Learn how to do it ourselves and then teach others. Huh? Learn what our relationship is with Krishna, that I'm his servant, and that by serving him I become very happy, and then encouraging, demonstrating, and then teaching others how to follow that same process. Then we realize in that activity, we realize our relationship with Krishna very clearly. And we actually get free from the influence of the material energy more and more as a result. And of course, in that mood of humility, we also have to avoid being offensive in our chanting. This is why, you know, every day we chant the 10 offenses before we start chanting Hare Krishna. The art of chanting is to avoid the offences and to focus on that relationship with Krishna in a mood of all humility. This is what it means to take shelter of Lord Chaitanya. Actually, to take shelter of Lord Chaitanya means to approach the chanting of Hare Krishna with humility. That's his instruction. Trinadu pi sunichina tororipa eva sahishnuna. Amanadena kirtaniya sada hari. One can chant Hare Krishna. Always. Sada means always. In that mood. So it means being humble in our chanting, but also avoiding those offences. That's the science, if you like, of chanting Hare Krishna. So we are meant to understand our relationship with Krishna. We're meant to act in that relationship, and then we are meant to demonstrate the results of that relationship or that action in that relationship. And then our business is to teach it to others. Does anyone have any comments or questions on any of these points? Your elevator pitch. Yeah, go on.
You teach the science of the soul.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That kind of really...
Yeah, science of self-realization. The science of the soul.
Summarizes everything, our relationship with Krishna and so on, you know, just the science of the soul. And it sounds good, it doesn't sound too religious, you know.
Too preachy.
Yeah, too much about God, you know, which many people don't want to hear about, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's old-fashioned.
Yeah, when he said he was a pagan, I sort of thought, pagan, oh, what does that mean?
And I thought, oh, I won't go there.
And the person comes to me on the street and you said on the box and say, are you a Hindu?
Are you a Hindu? What do you say?
I say we are based on the same literature as the Hindus. Like sometimes I explain that Hindus was brought invented by Muslims, or I said if we explain a bit of a function runs up a bit to the situation, but I don't really have a Krishna for that.
That's an interesting one because, you know, Prabhupada very strongly on many occasions preached, we're not a Hindu. But he would also say, we're not a Christian, we're not a Muslim, we're not a Jew. Right? We're a spirit soul. Right? So, because, you know, it's a designation. But at the same time, that has got us in trouble because, you know, when we preach to people, we're not Hindus, and they think, well, what, you know, these people are somewhat, they've got schizophrenia. On the one hand, they're following what would normally be the Hindu, recognised as a Hindu tradition, but if you ask them whether they're Hindus, they're, no, we're not Hindus. Right? So that's a tricky one. But often what that is simply is a person, what they're trying to do is just pigeonhole you. Oh, you're a Hindu. Well, we can just stick you in the Hindu hole and then forget about you. Right? So Prabhupada was very expert in not allowing people to just, you know, pigeon, you know, and put you away. So he would say, you know, you're not a Christian, you're not a Hindu, or what's Mahaprabhu's? I'm not a I'm not a Vipra, not a Brahmana, not a Kshatriya, not a Vaishya, not a Sudra, not a Sannyasi, or whatever. Yeah. Of course, that may be a bit elevated for many people. But somehow you have to get through that. You know, if people ask you, are you a Hindu? Then you can say, no. But then you have to say positively what we are. What we are. No?
Actually, in regards to that, towards Hindus, one has to be very careful. Because with this story in England, that one wealthy Hindu wanted to give a big donation, and then some... The very least said, we are not Hindus.
Yeah, that's right. No.
And he got, you know, completely put up, and he just didn't come to the temple, he didn't give his donation. Oh, well, if you're not Hindus, I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah, that's why we have to be careful about... we have to be careful about saying we're not Hindus. And
especially towards Hindus.
Yeah, well...
Because we want them to become Vaishnavas, so be careful. Otherwise, they just don't want to have anything to do.
Yeah, it's a challenge. How to deal with people, especially if you're doing book distribution, you have to be very. You've got to be very spur. You have to be pretty attentive to the person that you're talking to. Very attentive to their persona, if you like, so as to respond to them appropriately. For one person it may be okay to say, yeah, we're Hindus. For another it may not be appropriate. So you have to be very, you know, listen. Actually, the best thing is to listen to people very carefully and from that then take the cue. But it is interesting that Prabhupada discouraged the devotees from talking too much to people, and he encouraged them, give them the books, knowing that the sincere people would take the opportunity and then later on, reading the book, would then realise. No? But at the same time, it still doesn't hurt for those who are doing book distribution, and which is most of us. You know, we're going to be at one time or another faced with an opportunity to actually present ourselves and our philosophy to others, and we have to actually be quite... adept at doing that. I realised when I... Well, at that particular point in time, I was a little bit rusty. what am I going to say now? Pete, I have a question. What is the reference to Subji on the bottom of the... Sloka board. Does that mean you woke up at breakfast time or what?
I think
Because ordinarily one should wake up earlier than breakfast.
It sounds like lunchtime, because I start in the morning.
So they should wake up at lunchtime.
It's esoteric, obviously.
It's usually wake up and smell the coffee, so it's just changed the wind.
Okay. Fair enough. Anything else? Yeah, wake up and smell Krishna's flowers. That's nice.
Sunday is Tamal Krishna's appearance day.
Sunday is Tamal Krishna Maharaj's appearance day.
Sunday.
Yeah.
Sunday. It's not actually. It was a couple of days ago, wasn't
it?
The fourth. They're celebrating on Sunday. Where about? It says. I notice it says, you know, everybody welcome. But there's no information where it actually is. So I thought.
Yes,
it's unfortunate. I won't be here, so probably it's the first time for years for me that I won't be attending, which is a bit unfortunate for me anyway. But in the theatre, I think that's where we normally.
On Sunday.
On Sundays.
Communication.
Yeah. What time does it say?
12 p.m.
Yeah, it'll be in the theatre. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be here. I'll be in Canberra soon. But, you know. Alright, I think we should finish here. Gantaraj Shiva Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Shiva Prabhupada Ki Jai.